jump back onto Joshua. We are in Joshua chapter 3. We're going to begin in verse 14 in just a moment. And we're working our way through the crossing of the River Jordan. And like we said last week, this narrative is really slow and deliberate and repetitive. And it's that way for a reason. Right? So when I say, you know, I guess I should clarify, to an American mindset, words like slow and repetitive might sound like, you know, it's insulting or something or critiquing. That's not what we mean at all. What we mean is purely descriptive, that in describing this event, the Spirit is really slowing down, taking time, forcing us to slow down and take time, and really reflect on what is going on as it's happening. So we get things unfolding just little bit by little bit over the course of this story. One of the things that we noticed last week in this unfolding pattern is that early on in the story, we are told that they're going to set 12 men apart. We are not initially told what the 12 men are set apart for. We have no idea why you have these 12 men who are set aside, what purpose they are for. But that's going to be repeated in our text today, and it's going to unfold a little bit, and we'll see the purpose for which those men are set apart. So let's, you've set all the groundwork. Joshua and the priests and all of Israel, they know basically what's going to happen, what they're supposed to do. Preparations are made for them to actually go and do it. River. The river is going to stop. Israel is going to cross the river into the promised land, and that's going to set them up to begin taking the promised land. I almost forgot. One last thing before we jump into our text for today. Needed to make a correction from something that we said last week. Thinking about it, it's pretty quick mental math. I should have just done this on the spot. But 2,000 cubits, I think we had mistakenly identified that as somewhere in the neighborhood of like a mile and a half. If a cubit is roughly 18 inches, about a foot and a half, the 2,000 cubits would be roughly 3,000 feet. So if y'all remember from primary school how many feet are in a mile, 5,280. Yeah.
So it was wrong.
So 3,000 out of 5,280 is a little more than half, which is definitely visible.
Some other translations.
Yeah. So we're looking at a little over half a mile, less than 3/4 of a mile. So definitely within visible range. All right. So that's the last thing we need to do. So let's go ahead and jump into our text for today. We're going to start in chapter 3, verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped into the brink of the water, now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest. We should stop, by the way. All right, we're mid-sentence. I want you to notice how much of this sentence we have already read, and we have not yet reached the main verb of the sentence. Right? This is just the slow, deliberate pattern of this Hebrew narrative. We have all of these dependent clauses building up to what's going to happen. Right? Verse 14, verse 15, these are long verses. And we have not yet arrived at the verb. All one sentence. All right, we've got all these things going on. Then finally, verse 16, the waters come. Oh, we still not reached the main verb. The waters coming down from above Passover opposite Jericho. Now the priests bearing the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all of Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nations finished passing over the Jordan. Excuse me. We can stop there for just a second. Just to spend some time looking at the effects of the priests entering the river. Right, as soon as the feet of the priests bearing the ark were dipped in the brink of the water, right, it's like the moment they're touching that water, this great miracle occurs. Now we're given a little more information about the magnitude. Now, the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest. Right, that's the time that we're looking at here in Joshua. They're about to take the Passover that is typically associated with harvest time. So during this time, the Jordan has overflowed all its banks. The Jordan's not particularly deep, but at this point, it's very wide. And we're told that that flooded river that's overflowing its banks comes to a stop and rises up in a heap far away at Adam. Now, we kind of have to speculate where Adam is. Jericho is here, they're crossing over opposite Jericho. Here's Gilgal where they're going to settle in. Spoilers. We're talking about the river being stopped. By most people's estimates, probably about 18 miles upriver. Way upriver. And it is being stopped all the way down to the Salt Sea. Alright, so this huge, huge distance of flooded river is completely stopped up, and that entire area goes dry. Immediately, so that Israel can cross over on dry ground. Wayne?
I want this word.
Okay.
I forgot about it. I'm not mistaken. I think the Galilee, the Jordan, goes to north and south. Doesn't it empty into the Dead Sea?
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
So
it stops up here,
it'll be up there.
And it's dry all the way down.
Right.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah, that's what we said.
That would be north, not south.
That's what we said.
That would be
yes. So, but the thing is, they're saying it starts 18 miles upstream to the north and stretches all the way downstream to the Salt Sea. So, huge, huge area that is dried up. And the water, I can't imagine what it would have been like to be a person living, near Adam, where the water is stopped up. You go out your door and you just see water just piling up into the sky. I mean, who knows what it would look like. But for Israel, it looked like completely dry ground. The river was completely cut off. Which gives us some, it's a little bit of foreshadowing language there, because what Israel is about to do is they cross over.
This is totally different from the Red Sea, because the Red Sea, I believe, it says that the walls have been on both sides.
Yes. Yeah, so that they're passing between the walls of the Red Sea.
They can see the walls.
And then, you can see it there. Whereas here, you've got the water stopping way, way upstream. They've got this immense wide space to pass through. And that is, like we mentioned at the end of last week's class, to accommodate them, keeping their distance from the Ark of the Covenant as they are going around. So, good point. Alright, so the priests get down into the water. The water is completely cut off. And we're given this note about this is really about the obedience. Priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nations finished passing over the Jordan. Excuse me. All right, so now let's continue into chapter 4, because while they are in the river, we're going to see an important commandment of Joshua, a commandment of the Lord. Obey. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, take 12 men from the people, from each tribe of man, and command them, saying, take 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight. Alright, so you look at the time frame that we're given here. When the nation had finished passing over. Alright, so we're gonna over this remaining chapter, it's like the story's gonna hit the rewind button several times. Because here at the beginning of chapter 4, we're gonna see them having already crossed. Later in the chapter, they're not going to have finished crossing yet. Alright. The arrangement of this story is done thematically. Right? We learn about the going down into the river, and now we're learning about the stones. And that's put here for the purpose. Alright, so take these 12 men, command them to take 12 stones from here out of the midst of Jordan, from the very place where the priest feet stood firmly, bring them over with you, lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight. Now, we are not yet told why we're taking out these 12 stones. Notice the story just unfolding a little bit at a time. First, a while back, we had these 12 men are set apart. Don't know why. Now we have the 12 men are set apart to take out 12 stones. Why are they taking out 12 stones? They don't know yet. That will unfold. Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan. Take up each of you a stone upon his shoulders, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. Alright, so we get everything repeated to us again. Joshua takes the 12 men. He tells them to pick up the stones. And now we're told the purpose of the stones. The focus is on the purpose of the stones, that this may be a sign among you. Now this also, by the way, fits this pattern that we started talking about last week. What do we see the Lord telling Joshua about the stones? Just a few verses ago, at the beginning of the chapter, what did the Lord tell Joshua about the stones? Do we see the Lord explaining the purpose of the stones to Joshua? No, he just gives a commandment, take them up. Right, now, again, we are not saying that Joshua is speaking on his own authority here. What we're pointing out is Joshua's role as prophet, that he is explaining the word of the Lord to Israel. So he reports what the Lord said to him. Go and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of the people of Israel. And then he explains the meaning of that, that this may be a sign to you. Go ahead, Wayne.
When the priest is there, yeah.
At 8:15 a.m., this is what happened. At 8:16 a.m., this is what happened. Which is maybe how we would report the story. In some ways, yeah. And the reason why filmmakers do that, when they do that, when they tell a story, you know, in a different order, is to draw our attention to specific things in a specific order and reveal information to us in a specific way. Which we've noticed this narrative doing, right? The story is unfolding, so we get little bits of information added along as we go along. Yeah.
What else? There was an amount of time it took this million plus people to cross. Think of that as being done in a few minutes or hours. That's not even days.
Yeah, this is a long, long thing. Absolutely.
The river is backed up for all this period of time.
Yeah, and exactly how that works and what kind of effect that would have had, we don't really know. We're going to see what happens at the end when the waters are released. And I think it's interesting because it might speak to that question a little bit. But we don't see anything really super dramatic going on. Yeah. The river just goes back the way it was. And that's it. That's the dam.
And
yes.
All their
yes.
So
it's a long
period of
time. Yeah, you've got a huge camp crossing over. Yeah, this is something that this would have been, we're not told how long this takes. But it would have been a long undertaking. Right, Rena, I saw your hand.
So, I mean, the number never occurred to me. It was really more than a million. Seriously?
Yeah, so you've got, in the last census that Israel takes on the plains of Moab, they have over 600,000 fighting men, which is, you know, men of a certain age. So, we kind of extrapolate on that. We don't know their exact number at this point. But you assume there are more men in the camp than just those of fighting age. You know, there are those younger than 20. There are those, I forget what the upper limit is, maybe 65. That might be the priests. But anyway, there are those who are older than the upper limit. You also have the women and the children, and you have the livestock. An absolutely immense camp.
I can't picture it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's really mind-boggling how big this camp is. That gives us, by the way, some read into the reactions of the Canaanites. Right? Imagine that you were told that this crowd of millions was, you know, sitting at the Canadian border, or, you know, sitting at the Rio Grande, and all of a sudden the Rio Grande dries up and they're marching across, right? Like, I mean, and you live in El Paso, right? You know, that's, imagine how you would react. I don't think that we're really given that sense. We're not told specifically. We do know that there is a certain order that they're supposed to go in that we read early on in Numbers, if I remember right. There's a marching order that the tribes are given that's related to the arrangement of the camp. So we're not talking about them dispersing necessarily to fill the whole width of that passage. So this probably would have taken quite a long time.
We're not told how, why the columns work. But in the military, I was in the military.
Yeah.
We usually had something along the order of 4 to 36.
Yeah.
Which means it was kind of a rectangular thing like this. Not so much just wide like this.
Yeah.
But it could have been. In that it made it a little quicker to go across than you spread out. Rather than this.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're not told.
Yeah. And we don't even know that they marched in for me. Right? In an ancient context, it's highly important.
Okay, you can't really get a column like that.
Yeah, random file is hard to
find. Yeah, I'm not saying they marched, but saying, you know, how they crossed in what column.
Yeah, now we are told that there is going to be a military focus on this problem. We're going to get a little note on that later in the text. who forms that spearhead to cross over first into the promised land? Again, this is where we need to, you know, not get hung up on chronology or anything. So, good question, good comments. Let's get to, so we have the memorial of the stones. Alright, so this is what Joshua is explaining about the commandment of the Lord. When your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones will be the people of Israel a memorial forever. Alright. Excuse me, we've read a description like this before. When your children ask in time to come, hey, what's the meaning of this? Where have we read that before? The Passover. If you go to Exodus chapter 12, I want to say verse 26. Yeah. Exodus 12, 26. And this is where taking the time to pursue. Just to show you how similar the language is here. Exodus 12 is where the Passover is set up, you know, described, instituted. So we've got both the first Passover, you know, this is what Israel is supposed to do now. And then there's also the memorial feast of the Passover, which future generations are supposed to follow. And in Exodus 12, 26, when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians but spared their houses. The people bowed their heads and worshiped. Right. The exact same language here. When your children say to you, what's this mean? Here's the explanation that they're giving. Same exact thing with the stones. When your children ask in time to come, what do those stones mean to you? Then here's the explanation. Right? These are supposed to be associated with each other. We're going to learn that the association is actually really, really close. Just a little later on in our reading. One other thing that this is supposed to give us is another sense of foreshadowing. Right, because what does the Passover signify? That God passed over the houses of the sons of Israel when he struck down the Egyptians. Right, it is a memorial not only of God's mercy to Israel, but also God's judgment against Egypt. Now, what are the stones memorialize? God's faithfulness to Israel in keeping his promises. He's giving them the promised land. That's what the Jordan crossing is about. Israel finally gets to go into the promised land. It is also, at this point in the story, it's a harbinger of what is about to happen. That God is going to judge the Canaanites before Israel, just as he judged the Egyptians. Right. At this point, it's a harbinger. Later on, it's going to be part of the memorial. Right. You can look at those stones and say, not only was God faithful in bringing Israel across the river, but he was also faithful with Israel after they crossed the river. Faithful to drive out the Canaanites from before them. The memorial is also about his judgment on Canaan. Alright. Any questions or comments about the memorial?
This kind of stuck out to me. In Exodus, when they were making the stones, they put the stone on the shoulders.
Yes.
Yes,
as a memorial.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot that goes into this. I mean, we've got here, like with the stones of the breastplate, you've got 12 stones. Which is a memorial of the 12 tribes. Right? And here, in Joshua, that number is explicitly brought out. According to the number part of the memorial signifies is that Israel is united. All 12 tribes crossed over. Why is it significant to say that? Because 2.5 of the tribes don't live on the western side. They live on the eastern side of the Jordan. Right? But this is a memorial that the 2.5 tribes who live on the east side of the Jordan also entered into the promised land to help their brothers drive out the Canaanites. Israel is united, and God's promise is for all of Israel, all 12 tribes. Good question. In English, it almost, it makes it sound like there's a second set of 12 stones that Joshua put into the river that are also still here to this day. I don't think that's what the text is trying to get across. What the text is getting across is that the 12 men did not just pick up any 12 stones. Right? Joshua didn't tell them to go out and find 12 big rocks. Right? The specific stones are set aside. Right? So as priests are in the midst of the Jordan and the waters are held back, Joshua singles out these 12 stones, he sets them aside, and then the 12 men go down into the riverbed and they take these 12 stones to bring up out of the river to set up as a memorial. And we got one set of 12 stones, not two sets of 12 stones. Maybe in English it comes across kind of confusing. There is a big emphasis here on things being finished as they were commanded. The priests bearing the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that he had commanded. We're going to get this word several other times in our story today, or in this chapter. We're going to see that word. The ESV, I think, is fairly consistent in translating it, finished. That's a major theme of this story. Everything that is commanded is completed, finished. There aren't any loose ends in this story. Again, this is all about the obedience of people and the obedience of Joshua. Right, let's finish up today by getting through verse 14. Right, so we're going to get through, basically we're going to be on the other side of the river by the end of today. And when all the people had finished passing over, the ark of the Lord and the priests passed over before the people. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel as Moses had told them. About 40,000 ready for war passed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. All right, so at this point, at least in the story, Israel is finished crossing. The next thing that we're going to see is the Lord commanding Joshua to tell the priests to come up out of the river. Right, so we've seen a lot of back and forth on this. You know, the timing, is Israel crossed, or are they still on the river, what's going on? At this point, the crossing comes to a close. It comes to its completion. And this note about its completion is really relatively very brief. And it's not focused so much on the river as it is on Israel's obedience. You have the priests staying until the crossing is finished, the people pass over in haste, and then the people finish. Again, we're going to keep seeing that word finish. In this passage, we don't have a whole lot of focus on the sons of Israel in general, the whole nation. It very quickly focuses on specific people out of Israel. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Right? And of course, what do we know about Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh? What's special about them? Yeah, they're the ones that live on the east side of the Jordan. Why do we think Joshua, or why do we think the text is singled out those people to tell us specifically that they crossed? Yeah, because these are being obedient. Right? This is something where you would expect disobedience out of Israel. Again, Reuben, Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, they have received their inheritance. All of their wives and their children and their livestock, they're staying behind. If those are not crossing the river, they already have their homesteads that they're setting up. But these men of war are maintaining with Israel and with Joshua. They cross over armed before the people of Israel, about 40,000 ready for war. Right, so that uses them, they are going to remain faithful, and is getting us ready for the next section of the book of Joshua, which is the actual conquest itself. The last thing that we see, on that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. They stood in awe of him just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. The final thing that we read today is that the Lord keeps his promise to Joshua. God's been telling Joshua all along that he is going to exalt him in the sight of the people. Most recently, we saw that in chapter 3, verse 7. The effect of this is to fit Joshua for his place as Moses' successor. So that's been kind of an open question. Is Joshua going to be a worthy successor to Moses? Is he going to be able to fill Moses' shoes? Here, the answer that the text suggests to us is yes. It's not just because of Joshua, though. It's mainly because of the Lord. It's the Lord who exalts Joshua in the sight of the people. Joshua had to do his part. He had to obey. And we've seen him doing that, passing along the Lord's commands and explaining them as he does so. Now we see the Lord doing his part, that he exalts Joshua in the eyes of the people. And Joshua is now, in effect, the new Moses. One thing I want to draw our attention to before we close. So we've just had the crossing, and now Joshua is exalted in the eyes of the people. This should remind us exactly of what we read way back in Exodus chapter 14. And in fact, I want to remind us of everything that was said of Joshua. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. They stood in awe of him, or revered him, feared him, your translation might say. Just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life, just as they had feared Moses. This is an exact parallel, going back to Exodus 14, verse 31. This is right after the Red Sea crossing. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians, so the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. Joshua here is left in exactly the same position as Moses is left in after the Red Sea crossing. All right, we've got a little longer today, so we need to go ahead and wrap that up. Ready for the worship assembly. Thank you so much for your kind attention.